You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the people and ideas behind your favorite online brands. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Gloria Noto, welcome to the show.
Hi.
So we had you over at Lumi a couple months ago to talk about your company, Noto Botanics. Do you want to describe real quick what it is?
Sure. Yeah, that was super fun. And thanks for having me on that. So my company, Noto Botanics, my last name's Noto.
Yes.
And it is a full body collection. It's all natural and organic. It's unisex or unisexy, like we like to call it. Mm-hmm. And it's multi-use. So basically it's hair, skin, scent, a little bit of color, a little bit of skin glowing products that you can use in a variation of different ways.
And you got into it because you have been a makeup artist for how many years at this point?
A long time. over 10 years now. So over a decade.
Yeah.
I started out pretty young. I kind of knew what I wanted to do right away. I mean, I thought I was going to be a fine artist. I was in fine art school.
In Detroit, right?
In Detroit, yeah. Center for Creative Studies. And I was studying conceptual furniture design and painting, anything craft related to. I just wanted to use my hands. And I don't know, I was starting to feel a little funny about having to create conceptual work based off of someone else's critique or someone else's need. And that kind of really didn't work with me very well. And then I was working at a thrift store, and the stack of, I don't know if you know who the makeup artist Kevin Acoin is.
No.
He was one of the most iconic makeup artists in the 80s and 90s. He passed away in 2002. He kind of cultivated the concept of what being a makeup artist could actually look like back in the day, and especially in the 80s. Being a makeup artist really wasn't a known type of real job. So when I came across his books, my kind of world opened up because I already been interested in fashion quite a bit as a kid. So I found these books and then I was like, oh, I'm dropping out of art school and I'm going to do this. Cut to 10 years later, as I've evolved in my own personal life and my own wellness routine or cleaning up my life, not only emotionally, mentally, spiritually, but also physically, in the food I would eat, in the products I would use to clean my house, in the products that I started to use for my clients, just seeing how even the shift was happening overall, like having clients almost in a way demand that I only use natural products on them. And then my own personal interest sparking, like, well, what is a natural product and why is it something that's important to us? What's in all the other products that we're using and why is that not good for you? Then that just sparked my own self-education on all these things, in addition to a bit of a life crisis where I was like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? Just like, what is my output? What are the companies I'm working with? What's the type of work that I'm doing? What's the message? Like, what are the messages that I'm sending out in my work? And, you know, just feeling very disconnected to that and kind of wanting to put my own touch on something that I was really passionate about, as well as the wellness world. A world that I felt seemed very exclusive to a particular type of individual that I didn't personally resonate with, as well as didn't feel like my friends or my peers didn't resonate with either. Mm. You know, they were interested in wellness, but it didn't look like that for them.
And the products that you started with were maybe more minimalistic than...
Totally.
How would you describe them?
So kind of looking at that branding aspect of what I saw in the clean beauty world, it felt very layered with a lot of different information, whether that was like location or ingredients or just targeted towards women specific or targeted towards, you know, one very, very specific sort of thing. I wanted to strip it down. I wanted to bring kind of not only a minimalist approach to it, but also a design aesthetic, kind of coming from, I guess, my fashion background and my personal inspirations being like, let's say, Helmut Lang or CK1 or Jill Sander, you know, these different 90s minimalist approaches to things, also very gender fluid as well. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to kind of put that spin on it because let's strip it down and let the product speak for itself in a way. Let's also use less ingredients, powerful ingredients that you didn't need as much to achieve the outcome that you were looking for. Also, ingredients that can be used in multiple ways. So you didn't necessarily need to have 50, you know, products in your bathroom. You could use the one thing for three different things. I really think that's an actual quite practical way of doing things. Don't you want to just throw something in your bag or like have it in your bathroom and use it however you need it?
When you were studying fine art in Detroit, was there a particular medium that you enjoyed the most?
Okay, so I kind of started out really enjoying specifically painting, but then I took a metal shop class.
Cool.
And was like welding, using like melting metal, like putting them back together, creating these different shapes, the tools used, the gear used. Like I loved that. That's kind of what shifted me into considering furniture design. You know, when I left art school and started my makeup career, it left a pretty big hole in me as far as the artist, like the fine artist of myself. Mm-hmm. And I kind of filled that hole with actually starting an art magazine called The Work Magazine for about 7 years. And that really kind of helped me reconnect to the art world in addition to reigniting my love for painting. So painting has been something that I've continuously done over the years, still do.
What did your parents do? Or what did they do?
Oh, so my parents are Italian immigrants. They're from Sicily.
Straight from Sicily, they came to Detroit?
You know, I don't know why they chose Detroit from Sicily.
It's so like, do you speak Italian with them?
I wish I could say yes. I'm the youngest of five, and by the time I came around, they didn't want to speak Italian to their kids. So all my brothers and my sister, they speak it fluently, but then they kind of divorced when I was pretty young. So then my mom just spoke like half English, half Italian, like just very strange. So I know bits and pieces.
Well, my co-founder, Jesse, is from Detroit. And so I've spent a bunch of time there. And actually, I don't know much about Center for Creative Studies, but I've been to Cranbrook.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just like a magical Harry Potter land that was so inspirational. I'm a big fan of like the Eames, and actually we're sitting in front of a furniture thing that I made in school.
I was wondering about this.
A bowl? Jesse and I studied industrial design together.
Right.
And then when I got a chance to meet, you know, some of her family in Detroit, it was pretty fascinating. It's like a really interesting place to be from. I wonder if there are things outside of the Italian side of you that you got out of like living and growing up in Detroit.
Oh yeah. I would definitely say my work ethic. Mm. Strong from Detroit. I mean, you work hard there, and not just because you have to, but also because generally speaking, what you're working towards is something, if you're lucky, what you're working on is something you're actually really passionate about. So you want to work hard. And I mean, for me, I wanted to work extra hard so I could get out of there. And not only that, but I think Michigan is a very diverse place. There's such a beauty to come to that, because I feel like I was opened up to many different cultures from a very young age. I mean,
but it diverse, but also segregated in a pretty major way.
Totally. I moved around a lot when I was younger. I kind of went to schools in some rougher public school areas.
Mm-hmm.
So in my like elementary school years, first grade to elementary school, I was in public school, and then I went to private Christian school, which was a whole another ballgame. But during those public school years, for me, it was incredibly diverse because it was so many different communities and races in one spot. So I feel very fortunate about having that. And not only that, I moved out when I was very young and moved out of like the suburby area into more Detroit space. And the places I worked would bring very diverse customers as well.
I don't know if people really understand the geography of Detroit and how like real that is, because the suburbs are relatively like, some of them are really posh. Like there's a lot of like wealth coming from the auto industry. And then there's the famous, it's like 8 Mile. There's all the streets
I
are
lived
like
on
the,
10 Mile.
Yeah.
I lived very close to the 8 Mile.
Yeah. Like if you know anything about Detroit, it's like, you know, the number of the blocks are, you know, names of miles. And at a certain point, if you look at like demographic maps, it basically goes from being like all white to all black.
You're totally right. I mean, and I had that extreme difference when I lived with my family. I would go to my cousins' houses that were, I'm not even kidding you, mansions. They were huge, like old Italian money or like, you know, doctors, lawyers, whatever, construction worker, you know, construction company owners, mm-hmm. huge homes. And then when I moved out, I went into living in a very different situation where it was like, it was the hood. I was living in Detroit proper and, or Warren, which is very sketch too, you know, like just different places. That was such an extreme opposite. You would drive down the street and you would literally see just completely demolished homes, you know, and, mm-hmm. or like skeletons right. of homes. And it's just so normal. You don't even realize that it's that way.
And how did you make your way to LA?
So I decided when I dropped out of art school to become a makeup artist, I went full force into like producing my own shoots, finding photographers and models to work with, just doing every aspect of the shoot basically, except for shooting it and modeling it, just to get experience as much as I could. And then I kind of, you know, was like, all right, I gotta get the hell out of here because these aren't real models. These aren't real photographers. This is like a little sketchy, maybe like slightly borderline porny, you know?
Okay.
You know, just like a little weird. So I was like, all right, time to go to a big city. Which one? And I decided on LA because I knew one other person here. This whole concept of moving to New York, you'd have to have like a broker fee and like all this money that I was like, I think I had like $1,000 to my name when I moved to LA. And I just wanted a change of weather, a change of everything.
And so when you started being a makeup artist here, I imagine a lot of it was movies, advertising. What did you gravitate towards?
Surprisingly enough, not really movie stuff. When I first moved to LA, I actually worked for MAC Cosmetics. I was one of the managers there. And then I left there to become a national creative executive for an Australian brand called Napoleon Purtis. Mm. And then I left there after a few months because, you know, I just kind of realized corporate world wasn't for me. It's not what I wanted to do at such a young age. And then I signed with an agency within that week of quitting. And immediately I started working with, basically I started doing editorial work, some more magazine work, like fashion work. I did advertising work. I would work with a lot of musicians and I would work with some actors. And as the years have morphed, I work with a little bit of actor and more in the fashion advertising world, but not movies. I never really did. It's all print, which is kind of awesome. Shorter days.
Yeah. And in that world, I assume it really allows you to like flex your creativity. Like that is much different from what people wear day to day when you're going into the editorial world, I would assume. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I wish. You know, when I first started doing makeup, it was definitely, I was given more time to do my craft. You know, it almost was expected that makeup would take 3 hours. And a little bit more freedom to kind of play and mess up and redo and reconfigure, a little bit more teamwork, connectedness, like, okay, you're the expert, you're the makeup artist, you're the expert, you're the photographer, you're the expert, you're the model. Let's all do our expertise. And as in that beginning stage, I came from an inspiration that was heavily rooted in New York fashion or European fashion. So my take on it was very different from what I was seeing as far as what LA artists were doing in the early 2000s, which was a bit more heavy-handed. And I kind of came in with an approach, a little bit more of a minimalist, clean approach with maybe one targeted area, one pop of color and everything else really bare, maybe even mm-hmm. no mascara, you know, something crazy like that. Whereas now it's a bit different. I'm not saying it's totally like this, but it's, you got to be fast. I barely get any time to do my job. Usually I roll up to a shoot and people kind of already have laid out what you're going to do and they just kind of want you to do that. There's so many more formulas as to what successfully sells nowadays, especially with like Instagram and just like these advertising like teams. I don't even know what they're called, but like they just know these like formats of what sells and how it needs to be targeted and marketed. These like weird marketing teams with these funnel effects. And I don't know, it's just a totally different industry. And in some ways it's kind of cool. And in some ways it doesn't resonate with me still. Which is why I kind of came to the point of, all right, well, I love doing makeup. I love that part of it. But what more can I actually do and how can I actually put my imprint on it that feels authentic to me, and I actually have a voice in it because I feel like I'm losing my voice in my craft unless I wanted to like be some hugely outspoken person that's more on my celebrity versus my actually actual talent. So then, you know, that with a few other reasons is when I started to launch my brand, and I wanted to create an imagery of things that I felt were missing in that world, especially like multiracial aspects, multisexual, like different sexualities or different genders. I wasn't seeing the minimalist gender fluid approach for the wellness world, even in packaging, let alone like the actual imagery, the photo shoots, the models being used. I wasn't seeing that when I started my brand, and it's definitely evolved a lot more since then in that way, which is great. But I felt like there was a huge gap there, and I wanted to kind of fill that.
Why was that important to you?
I think that was important to me because that's a big part of who I am. I wouldn't necessarily call myself gender fluid, but I definitely have never felt like I've fit in one specific sort of box. I'm definitely interested in the minimalist packaging and branding approach to it on a personal level, but I'm also interested in the openness in the queer aspect of it too, because that's also a big part of my life. And I just felt like I knew a lot of queer individuals or a lot of gender fluid individuals or just people that just didn't feel like they fit in any sort of specific box, that weren't feeling connected to natural products. And that's why I wanted to put something out there that had that sort of voice.
I don't know exactly the numbers, but I'm sure the makeup industry caters 99% to women. Like, and have you found it challenging to open it up or try to bring in more men into, or people who don't, you know, non-binary people into that world?
Absolutely. Actually, it's funny because I think there's definitely still a stigma about even just like cisgendered men just being comfortable purchasing or inquiring about skincare, because I mean, we cater to that individual as well. I think that specifically the skincare industry deeply targets women and their in their what we would consider imperfections or fears or flaws. These like anti-aging concepts or these like brightening things or these like look younger, just all these different ways of making you feel bad about aging. My approach is more so like, it's going to happen. Let's do it gracefully and manage it how we would like to manage it. Instead of telling you that you know, after you hit a certain point, you're worthless. There's so much targeting towards demographics and, in products, and I guess in a way I'm targeting a demographic too, but it's much more of like a specific, like everyone demographic. I'm not telling you just because you're a woman you need to use my product, unless there's like a specific hormonal issue. We all have the same needs. We all want healthy skin. We all want to look our best. We all want to feel our best. And that's kind of where I'm trying to come from, that angle, instead of one type of individual.
On the one hand, you know, you've been mentioning skincare, and there are products that are, I don't know how to describe them, but like more functional in nature. And then there are some that have an aesthetic component.
Yeah.
Your product line is a little bit of both, right?
It's exactly,
like
yeah.
Mixing the two.
Yeah. I mean, so it's, you know, originally when I started the brand, I was like, should I do makeup or should I do skincare? And well, I like both. So I'm going to do both. I'm going to make makeup that acts like skincare because of its, you know, nutrient qualities to it. But yeah, I think I wanted to just kind of have something that had both. And then kind of touching back on the male demographic as far as reaching out to them, that's been something that's been actually really interesting to see how they respond to some of the less functional things like our multi-use colors or like our highlighters. It's like sometimes guys want a little bit of a flush on their cheek and like a little bit of a glowing skin, you know, but they don't necessarily want to look like they're wearing makeup. And that's kind of where we come in too.
Yeah. You would think that, especially in 2018, we had like David Bowie die a couple years ago, who is probably, you know, an icon in his time of a guy who is very open in his approach to like makeup and being gender fluid. That was like 30 years ago at this point, 40 years ago. We haven't really seen men open up to those aspects. Like men's fashion, men's makeup is a really, I don't know how you would describe it, limited sphere of things that people can do, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, our society hasn't made it the most safe space to feel like as a man, especially if you're, you know, I think for queer men, it might be a little bit of a different story, but if you're, if you consider yourself a straight male, but you also enjoy expressing yourself in these sorts of ways, that I don't feel like our society has really nurtured that aspect since probably the 80s in a lot of ways. You know, the 80s was a little bit more playful. I feel like there was a lot of more crossover in that. But especially in like the late 90s and early 2000s, I think that has been something that has been seriously stifled. I think, you know, our political climate doesn't help in that way either, where it's just sort of like you kind of have to be this macho man in order to be considered a man, and kind of cutting out all of the space for those that maybe don't identify in that way, but don't identify in necessarily being queer. Where do I fit in then there? You know, there's also that missing gap for those individuals too. But with that said, I do think that things are starting to actually take a shift in this current place in our culture. I think our culture is in a very interesting space where we are becoming a little bit more playful. We are becoming a little bit more open. We are becoming a little bit more expressive. I just think we still have a long way to go with that too.
One of the products is the Agender oil. Maybe you want to describe what that product is.
Sure.
Yeah.
So this is a very basic oil with a very strong message. This was another moment in my life when I was sort of asking myself what was going on, kind of tying back into the politics of things when our last election was going on. I was kind of, I think like a lot of people, were in a little bit of a panic mode and wondering, what can I do? How can I give back? How can I help make change? How can I have a voice? And my product line is something that is environmentally conscious, is socially conscious, wants to, you know, give back in ways. And I just sort of asked myself, well, how can I take it one step farther? So I created the Agender Oil, which has a political, social commentary in its name alone, but as well as in its funding aspect. So 100% of the profits of this oil go towards rotating organizations that we choose monthly, organizations that deal with politics, society, culture, gender, just civil rights as a whole. We donate to schools, we donate to Planned Parenthood, we donate to the LA LGBT Center, we donate to as many different places as possible, as well as taking suggestions from our audience. But this oil, it's a very basic oil. It has three ingredients: organic hemp oil, lavender and vetiver, so a smoky and a sweet, strong and a soft balance. The oil is for your anywhere hair and body. So if you grow your armpit hair out, your leg hair, your pubic hair, your head hair, your face hair, wherever hair, it's great for that. And it's great for the skin. The omega fatty acids in that help your hair strength and nurturing in that. So, and it smells amazing.
Yeah. I'm wearing it right now. I discovered it when you brought it over. Yeah. And I think something that's notable is the fact that you are still making all of the products yourself. And you were describing a couple of months ago, you were working on a huge, huge order of like tens of thousands of bottles. Where are you at with that?
That was 40,000 units. We finished it last month.
Wow.
That was a lot. You know, that kind of ties into an interesting thing. Like, how do you grow from there? Do you churn your space into a factory, or do you only take small orders, or do you work with the manufacturer that you respect? Like, where do you go from there? I know that some companies like to keep things in-house and have it that way. It's having that experience of doing such a large order that was needed in such a short amount of time was a huge learning experience for me and my team. It's a bit difficult because you have to hire a lot of temporary help. And then that whole process is really draining. You know, you have to bring all these new people that you've potentially never even met into your space, and you're not sure how they'll be, if they're really aware of the fact that they're going to have to like bottle and cap and scrape 40,000 units for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. You know, it's a lot. So that's kind of led me into a pretty tough realization and choice to begin to look for maybe manufacturing certain products of ours. There is a company that I am talking to that's based in Santa Barbara, so it's very close. It's a family-run company, it's completely certified organic, very, very clean facility. I would actually be able to go in there and actually teach them how I have my products made. It's very, very connected community. They work with a lot of organic brands. And I'm considering maybe working on that, especially specifically for our large orders, because I don't think I'm ever going to be able to do more than that 40,000 unit order in that amount of time.
And so you sell through e-commerce, but you also sell through wholesale. So that's where that's usually coming from when you have to do a big production run.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Which is a great problem to have. I mean, I've never really been able to think small on small scale. So for me, it's like, okay, how can I continue to grow? How can I continue to share this product with the world on a bigger volume? And what does that look like? You know, I'm not really interested in this point in my business to like look for venture capitalist help or like have a store in every city or have billboards everywhere or, you know, whatever the case is. I'm not really at that point, but I'm definitely interested in growing.
Talk about the moment from like having the idea that you wanted to create your own product line to getting your first customers and getting the ball rolling, getting the momentum going. How did that happen? How long did it take?
Being a makeup artist in the industry for so long, I have the luck of having built a really great network of not only individuals who followed my work, but also companies I work with, magazines I've worked with, that sort of thing. So as I was beginning to develop my company and my brand and the products, I was making it very public, and those that supported me or were interested in my work shared it as well. So as I launched my brand, there was already a bit of interest brewing up. So when I launched it, it wasn't too difficult to get a few starting orders, but it felt so good. I remember like packing like 20 oils and just being like, oh my God, I'm selling 20 oils. This is incredible. Like, this is crazy. You know, like learning how to package them, even like how to put them in a box, how to tape a box, all these things where I'm just like, just felt so excited about making. I was making them in my kitchen on my stove, you know, like making a mess and just mad scientisting it. And it kind of happened pretty fast. But, you know, what's interesting is as I began to take more approach to reaching out to stores and like trying to get more like wholesale accounts, it was difficult at first. A lot of these stores didn't know who I was, and we would have to send out a lot of free product to just get these samples out there and for these stores to, you know, test out. We would get a lot of, we love your brand, but we're not taking new apothecary, you know, when I first started. And now we barely send samples out to stores, and we get a lot of stores hitting us up saying, we want your line. So it's interesting how that shift and that dynamic has changed.
Yeah, especially when you're bootstrapping and not having investors, how do you make that call to send a bunch of free stuff or make free stuff? It's got to be hard because it's literally just like dollars coming out.
Totally. When you're first starting out, it's literally dollars just coming out. But that's the sacrifice you have to make, you know. Well, I had to make. I knew that.
Was it a gut feeling that you knew it wasn't, you weren't, how did you measure the like outcome of that?
Yeah, well, you know, I tried to be smart about being particular about the stores that I wanted to carry. So we would reach out to stores that we really respected. Mm-hmm. So that was a no-brainer. If you want samples, you're interested in even opening up that conversation, hell yeah, you're going to get samples. You're going to get a beautiful box presentation. Well, I'll even drive it over to you if you're in LA. You know what I mean? So it's sort of like just whatever you have to do to get your foot into the door of the people that you respect and you admire. Maybe not whatever you have to do, but mostly whatever you have to do, figure it out and get it to them.
And now you're opening up your own store. How's that been? Where are you at in that process?
So opening up a store has been something that's been in like the back of my mind for a few months now. Wondering if that would be the next step, you know, wondering, okay, do I want to like have an actual brick and mortar, or do I just want to focus on our online world? But, you know, there's something so strange about running a business that has a lot of online presence. Mm-hmm. It's like obviously it's not imaginary because I have my team and my studio working on this, you know, 5 days a week. But like that side of the business almost feels imaginary. Like, like it's just, okay, I'm sending this product off into the world, you know, and let's see what happens. We do have a lot of close relationships with the stores that we carry to or our vendors. But I think for me, I felt like one of the ethos of the brand for me was to create community. And I do try to do that with the people that we sell with, doing events with them, doing, you know, whatever with them. But I feel like there's still something missing in my own way of doing it while, you know, bringing people to me, like seeing my buyer, seeing my like shopper, seeing meeting with the store that I, you know, sell to, whatever that is. So I think we're ready. We're coming up on 3 years of running, you know, of launching. And I feel like that's like a good place. I feel like we've had such an amazing response as far as the growth of our company in the last few years, especially in the last year, that I feel confident in knowing that I think people would love to come to our store. I think that we could produce some really beautiful community events in our store. I think I would really love to see and meet the shopper. So yeah, when I kind of decide something, it's really hard for me to not do it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be patient with things, but I'm also very determined. So we are in the talks of a couple different spots right now, and this could be something that we launch as soon as the middle of fall, I think.
I mean, aside from maybe food, where you can go to, you know, Whole Foods or something and try samples, there's not that many retail experiences where someone's literally putting something on your face. Like, that's a very tactile, very personal relationship. So I can imagine how the e-commerce feels more cold than that.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it's really hard to describe a smell to someone. I can do my best to describe a smell to someone online, but how much better is it to be able to walk into a store and have the experience and it explained to you or whatever? And, you know, kind of even noting on that, like the fact that I am a makeup artist, maybe potentially having somebody come in and having me do an application on them and that experience, there's not very many stores that you can go into that you can actually have that done as well. And I mean, just opening a store for me, there's so many programs that I wanted to accomplish that are a bit difficult to accomplish in the online world at this stage of where we're at, such as like a recycling program, you know, different things that we could offer the community or people that live in California or visiting California, you know, workshops or panel discussions or maybe a Noto channel of some sort. You know, this world of just doing everything on Instagram is so exhausting and impersonal. And it feels like we live two lives, you know, like this online world life and then this real life. And I kind of would like to spend more time on the real life world.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of this, your business strategies come in a very instinctive way. Which is great. Do you balance that with, like, are you making spreadsheets, like, trying to figure out if this is going to work? Or is it all just coming from your heart and soul and brain and I don't know?
I mean, I keep getting asked that, like, do you have a written business plan? You should just go online and do one. I don't. I think a lot of it comes very much from the gut, listening to your customer, listening to what it sounds like they say that they need and want, listening to your, not just your like, you know, average customer, but also your wholesale customers, listening to these other store owners, seeing what they need and want. But, you know, I do think that there needs to be a balance of the intuition and the actual technical side of things. So that's where my assistant, Cece, comes in, who is a Virgo and very organized and understands these things. And I feel really grateful knowing that I have somebody on my team that can help me execute those things. And then I also have a consultant, Teresa, who, when I told her I was opening a store, I was like, I just want to know what you think. And can you help us with like the concept of what our budget needs to be and these numbers? Like, she's really shown me the beauty of having a budget and the beauty of having projections. So with that said, it's somewhere in between where I like kind of go on the gut instinct and then I kind of tell the people in my world, in my wheelhouse that have the more technical side of things, this is what we want to do. Is it possible? Can we do this? How does that look? And then they kind of sort that out.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned earlier that you can't do small things. You're always trying to think big. How big does it get? Like, what is your vision for the biggest possible thing for Noto Botanics?
It's hard for me to think that far because just knowing myself and my daily evolution on the things that I want, need, or think I want and need. Mm-hmm. The vision on what I have perceived for my brand has often shifted as well. I mean, when I first started it out, I was like, okay, we got to write like a business plan. We got to find a venture capitalist that wants to like fund this and figure this out. And then that shifted into me being like, wait, no. Let me grow my brand and how it feels good to me. Let me make some serious roots in it where if anyone tried to come in, they couldn't change it too much because we have cultivated a very, very deep rooted system and identity. So I'm not really sure what that looks like. I mean, I would imagine that a lot of brands would be like, one day we would get bought out for millions of dollars from a big company. I don't know if that's where I want to go either because, you know, but I do know that one day I'd like to retire. I do know that one day I would like to go on a vacation for a while.
Well, and how long do you want to continue being an active makeup artist at the same time?
So it's sort of funny because it's like all the dream type of makeup work that I want to do, I actually have a platform that I could actually achieve that with.
Yeah.
So, you know, the more that grows, the more opportunity I have to like work with the most incredible photographers I've ever dreamed of, or, you know, models or activists or whoever, you know, to be the faces of the brand or play with the makeup look or the hair look, however I want, you know, or work with the best of the best to decide on that. So I actually have this platform that has that capability and kind of coming to terms with like letting the idea go of being just a makeup artist to now being a business owner that's also a makeup artist that does most of her work through her own company is a new sort of identity that I've been growing into lately. And it feels really good. It feels really empowering and it feels right and strong. But I also like am having a bit of a hard time like saying no to certain things when it comes to the makeup world. And I don't think I want to stop doing makeup ultimately in the end in that way. I think that I would like to enjoy doing photo shoots that don't have anything to do with my brand for a while if they feel like they resonate with me or if I'm really excited about them. And to have that luxury to choose is something that I feel really grateful to be headed towards.
Yeah, one thing that we were joking about at the talk shop was that you touch literally like almost every product somehow, like big, that goes through your little factory and the stuff that gets sent out to people. I learned some of that in Jesse and I's previous company when we were making fabric dye. Something that's special about the world of liquids and pastes is that you can make it at a really large volume with not that many people. It's probably the, I get, you know, what I do most of the day is making software now. And software is really special because you can make it once and then lots of people can use it. And there's almost nothing in the physical world that works that way as far as products are concerned. But I think the world of like cosmetics and foods and liquids kind of comes close to that because one person, you just get a bigger vat, you get a bigger barrel, you start with like a little, you know, pot and go to a bucket. And that, in a way, I think makes it harder to stop getting so involved with everything. Because you're doing that, you're shooting photos, you're like also doing your job as a makeup artist.
Responding you get to emails.
You get to touch every part of the process in a way that maybe some other people don't have the luxury to because the product that they make is just, it's just not possible. So I'll be curious to see how you do that. And I think you sort of answered it by saying like working with the best of the best is maybe one way to do that.
Working with the best of the best and also for me still working with somebody that isn't a huge manufacturer, like somebody that's actually like a family run, smaller scale business, but that can still achieve more than we can. You know, somebody that you've developed a friendship with, that's kind of where I'm at with that process of things. It's like I'm developing a friendship with this person that I might be sharing this information with. It's really hard to let that go and to, in a way, it's still feels like touching all the product because I'm still formulating it. I'm still like teaching those that are feeling the product how to do it. And that's not too far on like what we already do in my studio with the people that I work with, my assistants that help me in the studio to fill and label and package. It's like I'm showing them how to do the actual thing. So it's just on a bigger scale now, but not so massive that I feel so disconnected to it. And it's like some crazy ass factory in like the middle of nowhere.
For some reason, the thing that I think of when I think of your products and you is just like risk taking all the time, because I think you have done that in your career. The products that you sell are about people taking risks in different ways. What are the kinds of risks that you wish people would take more?
I would love to see people taking more risks in expressing their personal authentic voice, whether that's a product they're coming out with or the way that they present themselves or their, you know, identity or whatever. Really taking time to understand what it is that they're trying to achieve that feels connected to them, and then sharing that voice as opposed to maybe just tagging along with ideas or concepts or culture. Like really finding out what they care about, what makes them feel good, what makes them feel fulfilled or excited, and having courage to share that. You know, just like having a space to be able to share that, and then also having our community and environment celebrate that and uplift that and encourage that as opposed to pressing it.
Mm-hmm. What makes you feel scared these days?
Oh my God, so many things.
there's no risks with that. Like the risk is that you're doing something scary to some extent.
What scares me is getting blown up by a nuclear bomb, you know? So like
life and death.
Yeah. So like if the next scariest thing is taking a risk on my business, then fuck it. I'm going to take a risk on my business. Because there's other scarier things out there to worry about.
Yeah.
You know, and I really truly mean that. It's like, okay, I can fail. Thankfully, I have an LLC, so at least mm-hmm. it'll go to that. But like, if I can try to act on my ideas that I feel are actually useful and bring joy, I'm going to try to do it.
Cool. I think that's a great place to end. So if people want to find out more about your stuff, where should they go?
Well, you can go to, I guess Instagram would be the first place, right?
unless they're listening to this in the future, in which case maybe they could go to your store.
Oh my God, please come to my store. It might be in Echo Park. I don't know. I am looking on the east side of LA actually. So trying to go in those areas. But otherwise,
keep in mind, someone could be listening to this 10 years from now.
Yeah, right.
They could have a store right around the corner from them.
I know, that'd be crazy. Who knows? Otherwise, if it's not 10 years from now, or maybe even still, Instagram, you can find my brand at Noto, N-O-T-O underscore botanics, or notobotanics.com, and or you can find me at Gloria Noto.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That was fun.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.